Hello there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, June 13th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Holy cow, we're back with more of the Erotic Mind series. And today's guest has a totally uninhibited mind that you're going to love. I am delighted to bring you one of the most unique voices in erotica today. But in order to do that, we must travel to beautiful downtown Cincinnati, Ohio to check in with the one and only Mr. Off the Chain himself, Eufdis Emery. And Eufdis is prepared to share a selection of the fruit of his erotic mind. And he will be reading from his acclaimed anthology, Off the Chain, Volume 2. So tighten your seatbelt, sex fans. It's going to be a wild ride. Our guest tells us that we can find everything there is to find about Eufdis Emery on the net by simply searching for, you guessed it, Eufdis Emery. But here's a tip. You'll find him on Facebook and Twitter, too. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up my How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab. The How-To Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay, let's get on with the show. Welcome, Eufdis Emery, and thank you for joining us. It's great to have you here for this Erotic Mind podcast. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
What's going on, people?
I hope that something's going on with them. There's certain something's going to be going on with them soon because they're going to be listening to us. That's for damn sure. So, I recently discovered your blog, eufdis-emery.blogspot.com, but I did so only after doing an internet search using your name. Most authors go out of their way to advertise their websites, but you don't, and I'll bet that there's a reason for that.
Yes, there is. I really don't bother with a website because you need to, you know, attract people to it. So basically what I do is I concentrate on pushing content out into the internet. So pretty much anywhere where I can put content, like blogs, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, any place where I can create an account for free, I'll create an account and then push content out to all those various websites. And then that way people can see different facets of my personality depending on what that website is.
Well, you're lucky that you have the name Eufdis, because I couldn't do the same thing because my name is Dick. You see where I'm going to have a problem with that. So when somebody searches for Dick, which we all do from time to time, don't you know?
Too funny.
First of all, I got to tell you, I love your name because it's so cool. And if I ever get a chance to change my name, it's going to be to Eufdis for sure.
All right.
Oh. Your site is very interesting because there's loads of information on it that is not directly related to your writing. And I like that because it helps flesh out the person. And that's the reason why I like to invite creative folks like yourself on this show, because I like to get to know the folks behind the art that we are discussing. So good for that. And in an effort to get to know you better, I suggest we play 20 questions. Are you up for that?
Let's go.
So I've learned that Eufdis Emery began writing reality-based erotica in 2004 with his first anthology, Off the Chain. Question number one. What is reality-based erotica?
Well, I kind of try to create my own genre in that I write erotica that's based on reality, things that have happened to me and my friends. So it's not fantasy by any means or my imagination.
Right. So then it's nonfiction, basically, you're saying. Yes?
Correct. I mean, I think reality is much better than fiction.
Well, when you say something like you were looking to create your own genre, well, you've done it. Because I don't know anybody else that's doing that. Do you?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
So a path blazer. I love that. you also tell your stories from a male perspective, and you are fond of incorporating wit and humor into your work. So question number two, is the male perspective the only perspective you write from?
Yes, it is. I mean, I sign other authors, and so I basically sign other female authors and you know, write and edit their books and do it from their perspective, but my writing is just from a male perspective.
Right.
Yeah.
So I also assume that you write from a heterosexual perspective. Is that true?
Yes, I do. Okay. I write from a strictly heterosexual perspective. A lot of my stories do have lesbian and bi content.
Of course they do, darling.
what I'm going to do, though, in my next anthology, I'm going to share some stories from when I was at Howard University in that, it was pretty large gay population there. And basically share from the standpoint of a straight guy getting hit on
by
gay guys.
I love it.
Yeah, so I will
capture
some of those stories because I got some good stories from that.
The interesting thing is, and the reason that I asked you that question to begin with is that so many of the authors that have preceded you in this series write from both female and male, gay and straight perspectives, and I know I couldn't do that. Can you tell us why you stick to this one perspective, just because it is reality-based, as you say?
I mean, because like I said, I think reality is better than fiction.
Right.
I mean, it's obvious to me when someone doesn't have experience in what they're writing about. I mean,
so
it just
stands
right out.
It's
true. And so I just can't get into that.
Yeah. You know, I've said this time and time again in this series to other authors, and I'm reading along in like a gay story. And gay short story, and I'm reading along, and everything is going along really nicely. And then the author uses a word that is completely inappropriate that no gay person would ever use.
Exactly.
Like he removed his top instead of he removed his shirt. No,
exactly.
No man would use the word top to describe his shirt.
Exactly.
And so you just know right there that that's a woman writing. That's
exactly.
Not a man, and
exactly.
I hate to say it, but it kind of spoils everything, at least for me.
Exactly. So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
So how many publications, hard copy and web-based, do you have out there?
Well, I have 8 books out right now, and when I put a book out, I put them out in every format. The only format that I don't have books out in is audio, and I'm working on that.
Uh-huh. Oh, good. I hope so, because there's nothing I like better than having someone read to me. I mean, that goes all the way back to when I was a kid. I'm terribly dyslexic, for those of my audience who don't know, and you probably don't know that either. And so when I was a kid in grade school, the nuns used to read to us, and I used to absolutely love that because I really got the drift of a story, and I loved the sound of words and all that kind of stuff, but I had such a difficult time reading myself, so it was wonderful. So I've carried that over, and that's why I invite people who come on this show for the Erotic Mind podcast, like yourself, to read from their work. And so anytime you're ready to launch into reading, I'm all prepared to listen. So there.
Okay.
Okay. So when you say that once you publish a new book, or every time you publish something, you publish across format. So that means hard copy, that means e-reader kind of stuff. Am I missing something else?
Right.
And there's several different e-readers, yes?
Correct. I mean, you have Adobe, you have a Microsoft Reader format, PDF format,
Barnes and Noble,
Kindle format, Barnes and Noble's format. Right. Exactly. Oh, every store pretty much has their own format. So I push everything out in every format that's available.
And so, this means. From what I gather from other folks that I've chatted with in this series, is that it means formatting. It not only do you have to be a clever writer, you have to be somewhat clever in terms of formatting the story on a page so that an e-reader can read it. Yes?
Correct. I mean, you pretty much have to have a MIS background in these days if you're going to publish against all platforms yourself. I mean, it gets pretty technical.
Yeah. Wow. Gosh, that's amazing. So I love the fact that you use wit and humor in your writing. Is this a reflection of your personality type, or do you think sex is basically funny?
No, it's a reflection of my personality.
You're just so vivacious and charming and...
I just look, sex is hilarious at times, so I try to capture that in my story.
Do you find that people sometimes, like, if you're in a sexual situation yourself and you start to laugh or chortle or, giggle or something like that, that people take offense or they get thrown off or they think that they've done something wrong?
Oh, no. I mean, because if it's something that's with me, they're probably going to be laughing, too, at that particular point in time.
Good.
If a person can't enjoy themselves sexually, they get kicked out of the bed. They get kicked right out of the bed.
It's so true. I mean, come on. Why does it all have to be so serious? And besides, orgasms are so funny. I mean, so charming, so joyful. And, why not? And laughing is a release, just like orgasm. But
exactly.
There you have it. So I've read some of your stories, and they are really, really smutty, and I love that. You never seem to shy away from being very explicit. So question three is it safe to assume that you don't write romance as a genre?
No, I do not do romance. I mean, there are romantic elements in my books, but as far as romance, no, I'd stay completely away from that.
Right. So, would you mind elaborating the difference between your work and a romance author's work for our audience?
Yeah, romance is something like, I looked into his eyes. Melted right there in my chest, and I knew at that moment that I would be his and he would be mine. I mean, that's romance. That's like, no, keep it. Whereas one of my stories, basically is, I walked into the room and she was good and ready for me. She threw a up and kind of like rubbed on her clit and motioned at me and said, "Come here, big boy, come get this shit." And I was like, "Oh, hell yeah, you know I am." My stuff gets more into, I try to lead you into it so you can both see it, hear it, smell it, feel it. I want you to experience all five senses. Right. A lot of people tell me reading my work, they feel like they're actually in the room, when they're reading it.
That is so cool. And, again, other authors in the series that I've talked to, no one can claim that kind of thing. And so, there's a lot of people who write some really wonderfully smutty stuff. And I'm a big fan of smutty. I'm not a big fan of romance. I mean, romance, I can do without. I mean, I can make that stuff up in my head. But, anyone that can be really clever in terms of, graphic sexual depictions, and also have a sense of humor and witty about it, they win the day as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Good. So, I've been meaning to ask you, what is off the chain mean?
Well, my best friend, she would always tell me that, hey, you are off the chain. You are just off the chain. So off the chain really is a reference to myself.
Uh-huh. And that means, you're, totally out of control.
You're just, totally out of control, totally out there.
I love it. Good. So, and I think you are, too. for so many reasons that I hope we get to as time goes on here. So, you said you started writing in 2004, and the erotic element began to appear immediately?
Correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically, I was reading Zane at the time, and you know, her first two books, I really enjoyed those. But then after I started reading more, they started getting kind of repetitive. Mm-hmm. So I started looking at other authors, and they were like, I could tell that they were writing from fantasy. It was fantasy. Yeah. It wasn't reality. Yeah. And so I basically said, I can do this.
Yeah.
So you know, I sat down and started writing, and I basically used that. You know, I always wanted to write, so I started writing, and also used that as a means of therapy for myself because I was just getting out of a divorce.
I see. How interesting. I want to touch on that a little bit later, too, because that's a really important point. So you just kind of launched into it. Did you find that, did you look back on, you know, as you were producing your first stuff and say, you know, this is pretty good, you know, I could sell this, or I, you know, this is going to make a difference, this is going to rock the boat some?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I started off, I tested, you know, I wrote an anthology first, and I tested it out by putting some of the stories out on different, you know, erotic and sex sites.
I see.
And people really loved the story, so I was like, okay, I know I got something here, you know, but I was a little afraid to put it out because no one was putting out anything that, quote, raunchy at that particular point in time.
Yeah,
so I was worried, but, you know, I wanted to do it at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So, do many people in your life know about your erotic work?
I introduce myself to people as two different people, depending on what type of person I think they are. So if I think that there's someone who, you know, would be a reader of my work, they meet Buftis. Mm-hmm. If, you know, I don't think that they are, they meet somebody else.
Those
people have two entirely separate personalities.
So Buftis is a nom de plume.
Yes.
I'm guessing. Cool. And very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. A lot of the authors in this series write under a nom de plume, and a lot of them say that, you know, it gives them the freedom to be something, you know, that they are really not, as, you know, in their regular day-to-day life. Does that play into your work?
No, I'm really not concerned about that at all because I'm on the cover of all my books. I pretty much did that because, you know, once I push content out, like you said, nobody has the name Buftis. So if you Google me, it's all me. It's 30, 40 Google pages of just Buftis. And so that's why
because you just can't have too much.
Exactly. That's why I selected that, so I can push all that content out there, and it all comes up underneath me.
And that was a conscious choice on your part to choose that name.
Yes, it was.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I got to come up with something other than Dick. I got to tell you. Although I'm really fond of Dick. You can use that in
the
story if you'd like.
Dr. Dick, that works.
Yeah, but there, you know, there are several Dr. Dicks. Dr. Buftis now. There's the Dick. Listen, I have to ask on behalf of our audience as well as myself. Would you mind sharing a juicy tidbit from your work for us now?
Sure, I'll do an
cool
excerpt
beans.
Out of my book, Off the Chain, Volume 2. It's my second anthology.
Uh-huh.
I have novels out as well. My first two books were anthologies, so I'll read a story out of there. And this story is called Taming Wild Punani.
Ooh.
Taming a wild horse is not easy. Even if you have the strength to hold on and not get thrown off, it will still be very hard for you to gain control of a wild horse. It always goes its own way and refuses to follow the way you want it to go. Sometimes it will start running so fast that you have a hard time slowing it down. Other times, when you want it to move swiftly, it walks too slow, or it gallops in exactly the opposite direction of the way you want it to go. So how do you tame a wild horse? First, it requires that you put considerable time and effort into taming it. You must have a strong personality. You must be physically strong. You must have stamina. In addition, you need to have the skills required in taming the wild horse, and you need to understand the particular behaviors of the horse you are attempting to tame. Only then can you attempt to tame a wild horse. The process to tame a wild horse can be applied to tame a wild punani. As I lay in Lucy's bed with the sheets askew, I look into her deep and perpetually dreaming eyes. The light of a full moon filters through the slits of her many blinds, painting the bed and her naked bodies in a pattern of muted light and shadows. I have ridden this mare, this thoroughbred, or should I say, more specifically, her punani, a handful of times. Each time that I have mounted her, she has bested me, thrown me from the saddle between her thighs in a writhing, orgasmic heap onto every surface that I attempted to tame her on. My bed, my floor, my couch, various hotel rooms, and even in a movie theater. I take great pride in my skills as a punani tamer. More often than not, it usually takes me only one strenuous ride to tame a punani. One good fuck subdues the pussy, making it docile and submissive. I'm not bragging, just stating a fact. But this pussy, this snapper, this wild punani between this woman's thighs continually frustrates me by thwarting my attempts at taming it. It gets wet. It gets so wet. Grips and squeezes me so tight. Curves to my dick just right. It's good. So good. It's just too good. She subjugates my dick to her will, and I am tame versus the tamer. But this night will be different. My will, my strength, my stamina, my skills, and my understanding of this punani have all been fortified. I am ready. Ready to take the reins once more. I will ride deep. I will ride long. I will slide left. I will slide right. I will ride slow. I will ride fast. I will shimmy and I will shake. I will ride this punani doing whatever it takes to subjugate it to my will this night. Let it begin. So just stop right there.
I love it. I love it.
Like I said, I put a lot of thought into
and
all the dynamics of getting up to and working into.
I know, it's great. I mean, I love the introduction. I mean, it's you know, I mean, not only you're telling a story, but you know, you're placing it into context. I love it.
Right.
And besides, you have to do all that research, don't you?
There you go.
It's tough work, but someone's got to do it.
It is. It's so hard. Oh, God. It's so hard.
Hard. I like that. You're a pervert. I like that.
Hey.
So, I understand that you own your very own publishing company, and it's called Domination Publishing. Is that right?
Dominion Publishing.
Oh, Dominion. Dominion, excuse me. Good. I gather that you started this in 2005 so that you could publish your own books off the chain, Volume 2. And so you want me to do what?
There you go.
So tell us more about that.
Well, when I first came out, I submitted my books to a number of publishing companies and got rejected by everyone. They were just like, you are too nasty, you know. So, what I decided to do was I went to Lulu and self-published through them.
I see. Got
And I was selling a lot of books. However, you know, after about 6 months after selling a lot of books, I was only, you know, making like, you know, $1.25 per copy of every book I was selling. You know, and all they were doing was distributing the work. They weren't doing any marketing for me. So I was like, hey, this is not going to work. So I basically started studying the industry, you know, asking questions at Lulu, finding out exactly what they were doing, and cut them out and basically created my own publishing company and just start putting everything out on my own.
Wow.
And so from there, you know, I haven't looked back.
And that brings us back to the how we began this conversation, basically, about cross-publishing against all the formats that are out there. So you must have some kind of background in this kind of stuff. Are you self-taught?
No, I have a my degree is in computer-based information systems, so I have an MIS-based degree, so it's pretty easy for me to do this.
So it's like falling off a log for you.
Yeah.
So, I have another question, and this is number 4. Do you publish your own work because you're an entrepreneur or because you have more control over your content? Perhaps it's a combination of both.
You're exactly correct. It's a combination of both.
Because
I basically put illustrations in my book.
Oh, do you really? Oh, good.
Yeah. You know, and you know, a lot of publishing companies, that was the main thing they had problems with. They were like, whoa, wait a minute, you got full penetration. What are you trying to do?
Yeah, like, we've never seen that. Oh, my God, you can't show that.
Yeah.
We've never seen anything like that on the internet.
So my than myself. You know, I can do whatever I want to.
And that's so great. I mean, really great. I mean, because there's a lot of people who would just shy away from that and just say, oh, okay, you know, let's sink to the lowest common denominator and let's just, you know, do it the way the publisher wants. I appreciate the fact that, you know, you've taken the reins, so to speak, as it were, and ridden this to fulfillment. That's really great. I love it. I love it. So, speaking of content, and you just mentioned, alluded this to this a bit ago, you have the most unique book art of any of the authors that I've chatted with so far. So, question number 5. I suppose that you are responsible for this aspect of your books as well.
Correct. I do all my own photography, wow, as well as all the editing.
God. Is there anything that you don't do? You want to talk about that privately sometime?
Well, I'm like P. Diddy. I want to make sure I'm on everything.
And most of your book covers, as you suggested before, besides being pretty amazing, feature you. Yes?
Correct. Yes. Wow. Yeah, I mean, because like I said, most of the stories are reality-based, and most of them are about me, so I was like, hey, I might as well put myself on the cover. Wow. You know, so that's what I do.
Wow. And also, your book art is a celebration of what we know in the business called BBB, Big, Beautiful, and Black. That also sets your work apart from just about everyone else's, and I really appreciate that, because sometimes I see, you know, in the world of erotica, that, you know, it's pretty stagnant in terms of book cover design. Models are predominantly white, they're predominantly thin, they're predominantly hairless as men. You know, it just gets so repetitious, and it doesn't really reflect the diversity of the people who are actually consuming the stories, right?
No. Exactly. I mean, the women in my books basically are all different sizes, shapes, and colors.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, the main thing that you'll see in my book is ass uh-huh. and legs. So if you're an ass and leg man, you'll definitely enjoy the illustrations of my uh-huh. books, because uh-huh. I make sure I show a lot of ass.
Huh. Good. So I understand that, and again, we go back to one of your first comments. I understand that you have several sites that promote your writing, and that you used to host an internet radio show, appropriately called Off the Chain. So, question number 6. The show is no longer on the site that it once was, right? Are you looking to revive it in another venue?
Yes, I am. I mean, you know, after, you know, seeing some of the stuff that you're doing, I'm actually thinking about bringing it back as a podcast.
Oh, great.
The previous show had full video, and it was, you know, X-rated and fully explicit.
Oh, my
but
goodness.
It'll still be X-rated. It'll still be explicit, yeah. But it'll just be a podcast only. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm definitely looking at bringing that back, because I really enjoyed doing that show, and it was an excellent advertising avenue.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I mean, you've got the best radio voice. Oh, my God. So, yeah, absolutely. So, I totally. And you know, to launch into, you know, audiobook form, too, I just can't wait for that, because nobody probably reads your stuff as well as you read it yourself.
Exactly.
Good. So, I also know that you have your own YouTube channel. So, question number 7. Are you some kind of multimedia mogul?
Well, like I said, any place that'll let me put content on their website, I'm pushing it out there.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so, you know, what I do on YouTube is I review other authors' books.
Oh, I see.
And I do videos of those reviews and push uh-huh. those out to YouTube.
Right. So, is being Euphtus a full time job?
It sure is, but I love it.
But you also have a full-time job, I'm assuming, someplace else, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm like David Wayans. I work 2-3 jobs.
I love it. Well, it's a good thing that you do, because, you know, we're the richer for the experience, that's for sure.
Thank you.
So I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up for today, and yet I'm just getting to know you, and I'm just getting to the nub of Euphtus Emery. So is it possible for you to come back next week and chat more with us about your work and how you do it?
I would love to.
Oh, cool. But before we go, could you tell us how to find you on the net?
Well, my books are basically sold on every e-reader platform, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and Sony Reader. And so if you have an e-book reader, you can pick it up there. Or if you just want a regular soft copy book, you can get it at Amazon.com, Walmart, Target. Anywhere where fine books are sold, you can find my books. If you have any questions about me, just Google me, Eustis, and everything will pop up.
You are on Facebook, too, though, right?
Yes, I am.
Cool beans. Excellent. And Twitter. And you're a
exactly.
Twitter guy, because I follow
exactly.
you, and I know that. All right, my friend. Until we visit you again next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Have a good week,
Thank
my friend.
You.
Bye.
You too.
What a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my interview with Eustis Emery and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There's no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute kind of deal. And remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? I have one more thought. I hope that you're also following my two other interview series which appear on Wednesdays. One is called Sex Education, and I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles, and we investigate the world of fetish sex and kink. The other is called Sex Wisdom, and here I chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves. I can assure you that these conversations will be well worth the time you spent with us. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.